All right, candidates, we're now going to move into the rapid fire part of this. Yeah, if you'd like to. And we'll start with John. Do you believe that the United States should pull out of the Paris Climate Accord?
No.
Grant?
No.
No.
Hell no.
All right, Grant, we're back to you then. Who are you most excited to meet when you go to Washington, D.C.?
I think Barack Obama's still living in town.
Jared?
I am looking forward to meeting some more Montanans when I go back to D.C.
I'd say Joe Biden. I hope he's still in town. He'll be here, actually.
John?
Yeah, I'm with Jared. I'd like to see some Montanans and maybe a Philadelphia Eagles football team if they come into town to collect their Super Bowl.
All right. Jared, do you support diverting public funds away from our public schools for any reason?
Never.
Kathleen?
No.
John?
Yeah, no.
Grant?
Hell no.
All right, Kathleen. It's you this time, isn't it, Kathleen? I'm losing track here.
No.
Do you support a $15 an hour federal minimum wage?
I support a federal living wage.
John?
Yes.
Grant?
No.
Jared?
Living wage, definitely.
All right, John, do you support safeguarding student loan forgiveness programs such as those for working in public service and in rural areas?
Absolutely.
Grant?
Yes.
Jared?
Definitely.
Yes.
Okay, Grant? Do you support a carbon emissions tax?
Yes.
Jared?
Maybe.
Kathleen?
We're looking at it.
Maybe.
Jared, do you support imposing a transaction fee on Wall Street trades to discourage high-frequency trades?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, and we need to work on the computer trades, actually.
John?
Yes, Robin Hood tax.
Grant?
Yes.
Okay. Kathleen? Kathleen, do you support laws that create publicly financed campaigns?
Yes.
John?
Absolutely.
Grant?
Eventually.
Definitely.
Last one here, back to you, John. Do you support the legalization of recreational marijuana?
I support the decriminalization of marijuana on the federal level. I've written an op-ed on this.
I'll take that as a no.
Well, it's not a no. It's a definite maybe.
Grant?
I support states' rights.
Leave it to the states.
Kathleen?
I support medicinal use and declassification or reclassification.
All right. Thank you all for that. Now we're going to move into another two-minute round here. Okay. And we're going to start with you, John. You ready?
Yeah, just so everybody knows, that little hot seat round was quite hot from where I was sitting.
That's what we wanted it to be.
It's this seat is warm. I'm going to jump up already.
All right. Democrats seek to expand access to quality health care for Americans, with many proposals from fixing the Affordable Care Act to Medicare for All. What specific health care policy do you support, and how will you get it passed in the U.S. House?
So everyone understands, what I do for my job is to sit across the table from people that are having their wages garnished or have a stack of medical bills that they can't pay because they have cancer, and so they can't work because they have cancer. Or I fight with insurance companies that won't pay claims that they ought to pay. And so what I see is a broken healthcare system. It's inefficient. It's incredibly inefficient. Using private insurance companies, it costs us 6 times the administrative costs of relying on a Medicare system. There's just so much waste. And why do we have so much waste? Why are we the only industrialized country that doesn't have a single payer system? The answer is corruption. The answer is, The answer is politicians that are more concerned about acting in the interests of health insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies than they are in providing us with quality, affordable health care. So the ACA got us far, and you know, a lot of people got insurance that didn't have it before the ACA, but let's be real. The ACA was written by health insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies on behalf of health insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. So I support Medicare for all, and thank you. And my clients don't have time to wait, and and the people of Montana and America don't have time to wait. The time is now, and again, what we deserve is representatives that will represent us and look at our best interests, not the best interests of the pharmaceutical companies that are writing the donations, the health insurance executives that are cutting the big checks to the politicians so that they have strings attached. And so, as your representative, no strings attached. Let's get to work on implementing Medicare for all right now, and let's focus on fixing this broken healthcare system, not padding the pockets of insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies.
Thank you, John. Grant?
So I was raised by a single mom who is a nurse. If she hadn't worked at the clinic she worked at our entire lives, we would not have had access to care as small children. And I'm quite certain, given 2 young brothers growing up together, beating each other up often and playing outside, she would have been bankrupt. I'm not kidding. She would have been bankrupt. And our lives would have been very different today. I think we absolutely have to get universal coverage at an affordable rate to people as fast as possible. I do not believe that Bernie Sanders' plan does that trick. I want to get to work the day I'm elected, building partnerships, and I want to get to work the minute I get into DC to make sure that we have more transparent pricing for people, that we offer a public option on exchanges where there's limited competition like places like Montana, and then we get to work before we expand the Medicare system, fixing it so that it doesn't turn into the military-industrial complex where we don't know where our money is going. What's really broken with healthcare right now, 65% of the costs that we pay compared to other developed countries are about the way that we charge for services. We've got to change, and the Affordable Care Act made progress towards this. We've got to change the way that we incentivize care providers so they are keeping people healthy. We can do that without completely blowing up the system, and we can do that in a way that gets people care faster, and we can get people the quality care they deserve immediately if we can make those changes and empower them to have more transparent choices with who is providing their services. We don't need to blow the system up to do that, and then we can evolve and migrate. A new proposal has just come out in the last couple of days called Medicare Extra. It sounds a lot like what my team has been thinking about and developing with a lot of people we've been talking about. I haven't had a chance to look at it in detail, and I don't know if I support that. But that, I think, offers some insights into how we can do this in a quicker way to get more people care immediately.
Thank you, Grant. Jared?
Don't all Americans deserve access to affordable health care? Yes, yes. And we got to make it happen. We got to do it. We got to get people there. We've seen things go in the wrong direction. Premiums are going up. Prescription drug prices are going up. Access and insurance is going down. I am skeptical of trusting the government with all of my health care. I don't trust this government, definitely not with all of my health care, because they've worked right now to undermine the system that we have. And if they had even more control and more opportunity, they could do even more and even worse things than they are already doing to undermine the Affordable Care Act. So I want to see us work on the system that we've got and not upend it and start all over again. It has opportunities to modify it. I see a couple in particular. I see one in prescription drugs, and I see one in expanding coverage. I want to pay people to enroll in the Affordable Care Act to get on the exchange. We'll give you $100. We'll give you $200. It's a pain to do all of the work. I know, I'm on the exchange. And you got to go look up this and find that and put all this stuff together. And I think if we paid people, we get more in the system. It helps push down on rates by spreading the risks more broadly. And we can work on prescription drugs. I was on the buses with Brian Schweitzer back in 2000 when we were taking buses to Canada to bring back cheaper prescription drugs. I was there. And I've been thinking about this a long time. We have market failure. One of the reasons we don't have a real market for prescription drugs because nobody wants to re-import the drugs that once they leave. And that's what the politicians say, oh, we can't re-import. We don't know if they're safe. We don't need to remove the drugs around. They're here in America. We just need to set the prices and solve the market failure by saying, look, we're not going to charge more in America. You're not going to charge more in America, pharmaceutical companies, than they charge in other developed nations. We're going to solve the market failure. We're going to do it, and it'll bring prescription drug prices down, and we can tinker the system and put pressure to reduce costs and expand access.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
So everyone deserves affordable, quality, accessible health care. As I talk to Montanans around the state, health care is often their top priority. We have people on the individual market that are paying tens of thousands of dollars in premiums and potential co-pays before they would ever see any service. And that is bankruptcy potential. That is a broken system. So our campaign has put out a fairly specific approach to fixing healthcare at the federal level. One, we need to ensure that we are stabilizing the individual market. We're reducing those costs through both purchaser subsidies that were supposed to come through with the ACA and the payments to the insurance companies that were supposed to come through with the ACA. We need to allow Medicare to bargain for drug prices, just like the VA and Medicaid can. We need to ensure that CHIP and the Rural Health Center funds are funded permanently, not just kicked down the road. And we need to have a national dialogue on not having a pendulum just swinging back and forth with repeal, replace, repeal, replace. We need to have a national dialogue about how we fix our system once and for all. And my proposal is to allow, to foster that dialogue, is to allow people 55 and older to buy into Medicare. And we'll use that group to both lower the costs in Medicare, lower the costs in the individual market, and use them and their stories, which they will love Medicare, I'm sure, to further explore this broader public option single payer. The Sanders bill is a 4-year time frame. The CAP proposal is an 8-year time frame. We need some steps that will really foster that dialogue and that solution. So 55 and older buying in is great. I've worked on these issues in the legislature, had great success on health care. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. All right, you're going to be up this time, Grant. I didn't forget you, okay? The next question here. Federal investment in infrastructure fosters job growth, improves transportation, and expands communication, healthcare, and education. Infrastructure investments can also increase use of clean, renewable energy, which in turn cuts planet warming, carbon emissions, cleans the air, and creates jobs. What infrastructure investments do you see benefiting Montana?
Thank you. So I worked in engineering geophysics for a couple of years in North America and throughout Europe. I watched other countries investing in infrastructure, testing, investing, redeveloping, rebuilding. State after state, country after country, community after country, our country is falling behind the rest of the world. The places that we can invest right now our roads, bridges, broadband infrastructure for our rural communities. Those are absolutely essential so that our communities can be safe, so that we have fundamental infrastructure to drive our economies. We can continue to invest in building infrastructure in our educational facilities. That's absolutely essential to make sure that our kids have the best and most up-to-date and technologically advanced facilities to learn in. Those are all critical places. In terms of energy infrastructure, we have the capacity to deliver energy right now to the West Coast. They want different forms of energy. In order for us to transition and deliver that energy safely, we have got to invest in new power line and delivery systems that are safer and can handle new forms of energy. That will allow us to deliver the energy that markets are demanding from us. That will allow us to transition and ensure that great paying jobs in Montana can continue, they will be safe, and they will last for generations.
Thank you, Grant. Jared?
I defended $16 billion of infrastructure. I know how important it is. I defended wind farms and highways and public rail that expanded access, expanded mobility, expanded clean energy. So I'm running on the wind in the trees. It's making money out of thin air, and it's using the money that grows on trees to manage forests to reduce high-severity wildfires. Wind energy is the next treasure from the treasure state. We can put wind and farms near the rural areas where it brings the best paying jobs in town, it rents land from the landowners, and it brings money, tax money, for our schools and for the state. This is Montana's next move, and we need to get on top of it because we have an opportunity here. And if we invest in Montana, that's how we're going to move forward. There are new transmission lines, electricity transmission lines, that move that energy at half to a third of the losses as conventional technology. We can use that to compete with energy sources, renewable energy sources, closer to Seattle and Portland. Seattle and Oregon, Washington, Oregon, they have renewable energy targets. They have demand, we have supply. It's a match made in heaven. And we can build Montana, we can move it forward, we can bring jobs and help our rural communities. We can put them by the reservations and expand everything. That's what I want to do.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
This is a question we can probably all build on each other. I concur with roads, bridges, energy infrastructure, and I'll use the past answers to just add a few. One is I have, with a master's in recreation, I have always thought that recreational facilities are part of infrastructure and should be considered that way. Trails, bicycle lanes, all those things that can contribute to our quality of life, and also tourism and bicycle transportation throughout Montana. So we have real opportunities to enhance that kind of activity. We also need, I concur with the broadband, especially infrastructure that helps our rural communities, and broadband is one of those that we really need to think about Montana, not just as our cities, but our rural communities and our big open spaces. I just had one go out of my head. Schools. Definitely schools have been mentioned. Energy storage. I think renewable energy is just so absolutely key. We have all kinds of opportunities here with wind and solar and with the transmission. We need firming infrastructure. So whether it's pump storage projects, or I just met yesterday with this incredible new technology battery storage company up in the Columbia Falls area, and I think that's a real opportunity for Montana and infrastructure. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
You know, candidate Trump campaigned on $1 trillion of infrastructure spending, which frankly sounded really wonderful to me, amazing to me. And yet what we see instead is over $1 trillion handed out to corporations and billionaires that already have lots of money through tax cut bill. And now what we see is a tax on Social Security and Medicare and all the things, the programs that we hold dear, and no mention of how we grow our crumbling economy, our crumbling infrastructure. And that's, again, because those that are making the decisions are making decisions based on what's in their best interests. And those that are making the decisions are the ultra-rich or corporations or those that are more concerned, the Koch brothers and their gang, are more concerned about putting more money in their own pockets than the health and well-being of this nation. And so all the things that my friends here mentioned, let's rebuild our schools, let's rebuild our roads. There's an opportunity to do a civilian conservation corps like we used to have, where we put people to work in good paying jobs in Montana, rebuilding our communities, in particular our rural communities. We all benefit from that. That's the way to grow the economy the right way. Our college here at MSU, even if your child doesn't go to MSU, this is such the right way to grow an economy, by investing in our university systems, investing in our children, investing in our future. So let's make that happen. Let's make that happen.
Thank you, John. Okay, we're coming to the last two-minute question. And we'll start with you, Jared. The Women's March has become a movement, with 1,500 marching in Bozeman this year. It is up to our leaders to turn these voices into policy and law. Universal pre-care education, safeguarding access to reproductive health care, and paid leave for childbirth are examples of policies the U.S. House could implement. What policies do you support that reflects the voices of the Women's March?
Kathleen, you want to take this one first? I listen. When it comes to these issues, I like to listen because I don't always know the right way. And I'm, turns out, not a woman. So I like to listen and hear what's on people's minds to make sure that I go in the right direction and that I... and that we do adopt the right policies that move everyone forward. I actually, I marched in both women's marches. I had a great time. I'm glad to see the energy and people coming out and supporting these issues, because these are all of our issues. And they arise a lot because I call it wealth, it's resource extraction. Whenever you have a less powerful collective group of people and a more powerful group of people, that more powerful group is going to try to take the resources from the smaller group. We see that all over. We see it with women. We see it with minorities. We see it with the white supremacists. And we need to turn that tide and push it back. When we get to particular policies, we need to protect Planned Parenthood. We need to support sex education in the schools. And we need to make sure that we're not assessing sales taxes on products that only one gender needs. We've got lots of things to do. Those are just a couple. I'm listening, and if you have any great ideas, please bring them to me.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
As it turns out, I am a woman. So I had a wonderful opportunity to march in the Missoula Women's March this year. It was just a blast. And so I can tick off all kinds of things. We need to stop the war on Planned Parenthood. We need equal pay for equal work. We need affordable child care. We need to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. We're two states off. We need opportunities for women in business to start their own and be successful. We need paid family leave, whether you're raising a family or taking care of a loved one. I want you to know that I have been a strong voice in the Montana legislature for women's issues, for non-discrimination, standing up in front of 99 of my colleagues and falling on my sword for reproductive health, education in our schools, access to birth control, and the ability for cities to pass non-discrimination ordinances. And I will be a strong voice for those issues in Congress. And I'll tell you, It's been 101 years since Montana elected the first congresswoman in the entire United States, and it's about time she had a successor.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
So I had the opportunity to march in the Women's March in Billings with my family. And for those that know me, I think you'd say that my strength is the strong woman that I'm surrounded by. And that starts with my wife, Megan, who's just my rock and gives me a lot of guidance, always in the right way. And it's when I go to work with my law partner, Colette, who's just an amazing, strong woman. And I watch, particularly with Colette in the legal world, you know, there's such disparity. And it's 2018, there's disparity with income, there's disparity with treatment, there's disparity with, I've seen the glass ceiling, it's real. And as we learn these stories after stories, and I mean, I've represented women that have been sexually harassed. I'm about to file a case right now on behalf of a woman that was sexually assaulted by a law enforcement officer. And so, you know, there's this power imbalance, and nowhere is the culture of corruption worse than in Congress, where scandal after scandal after scandal is coming to light, and we as taxpayers are footing the bill for these congressmen that act inappropriately. And so there's a culture of corruption that needs to come to an end. And in terms of what are things that you can do right away, women deserve equal pay for equal work. This is 2018. Are you kidding me? Paid family leave, and frankly, economic positions. You know, my espousing Medicare for all, my espousing a living wage, my espousing reshifting the balance back onto the taxpayer for public college. Those are all economic policies that overwhelmingly will benefit women and enable them to break through that glass ceiling and succeed and beyond.
Thank you, John. Grant?
I mentioned I was raised by a single mom. I have been marching behind a woman since I could walk. Yeah. I was proud to march with my wife and my daughter, Fiona, who's 9 years old, at the Missoula Women's March. This is really personal for me. My dad walked out the door when I was 6 months old, and he never looked back. And strong women have defined my success in my life. The one that I'm raised by, the one that I'm married to, and the one that I'm now trying to raise. And I am proud to be in Montana, a place with incredibly strong women and a legacy of strong women. And I will do everything I can to make sure that women are empowered to exercise their rights, to have equal pay for equal work. I will absolutely defend a right to choose. Right to choose whatever health care you and your doctor decide you want, anytime for any service. And I will defend labor unions and call for whistleblower policies so that no woman feels unsafe in her workplace and everyone feels like they go to work and they are treated with respect and they have every opportunity to deliver the services and the abilities that they have. I want my daughter to grow up in the world where we are not having this conversation. And I do not believe for a second that we have to be women to talk about this. It is absolutely important that we have leaders who are men, who are white men, who acknowledge that we have incredible privilege and that we have a responsibility to use that privilege to create an equal opportunity for every human being in our country and in our state, period.
Thank you, Grant. Okay, that concludes all of our two-minute answers. We're now back to the firing line here. And as I told you, I've got some questions here Looks like I have six of them. They're written by somebody in the audience. I don't know who. I'm going to read them to you just the way they were written. And we'll just start with you, Grant, okay? Can you envision any scenario where you would support the use of nuclear weapons?
No.
Jared?
Maybe.
Kathleen?
No.
John?
No.
All right, Jared, you're up next. What is your approach to the constant and persistent attacks on a free press? This is kind of a tough one for a yes or no answer. Who handed me this question anyway, Hillary? Let's just say like a one-sentence answer on this one, okay? I'll repeat the question. What is your approach to the constant and persistent attacks on a free press?
Let us have a sentence.
At least a sentence. I'm going to use a little executive privilege here and say that you have a 1 minute to answer that, okay?
Our press is one of the safeguards of our nation, and we need to let them do their job and bring their truths to us, and we need to defend the First Amendment at all costs.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
End it.
John?
Stop electing politicians that engage in violent rhetoric and that commit violence towards journalists.
Grant?
I think we need to recognize that the whole world is taking advantage of us right now and creating fake news, and they're creating division in our country at alarming rates, unbeknownst to most of us. We need to defend against that immediately. And we need people who will be elected to office and will show up and not only meet with the press, but the elected people. That's why I made a pledge to hold town hall meetings if I'm elected across the state of Montana. And I will never shy away from meeting with the press and answering their questions. And I am not afraid to say, I don't know. And I'm not afraid to say, I need more time to figure that out. But I will answer the press questions.
Thank you. Kathleen, are you ready? Do you support making student loans dischargeable in bankruptcy?
Discharge? I think so, if I know what that means, yeah.
John?
Absolutely, it's a crisis.
Grant?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
Okay, John? After Standing Rock, states are enacting laws to limit protests in order to protect, quote, critical infrastructure projects. Do you support or oppose?
The laws that would ban
that kind of a law.
I oppose any law that would restrict peaceful protest.
Grant?
Absolutely oppose.
Jared?
Protect the protests.
Oppose a law like that.
Okay. All right, Grant. What do you believe is the single greatest threat to public lands?
Trump.
Jared?
Zinke.
Kathleen?
Zinke and industrialization.
John?
The Republican platform.
Okay, this is the last one, and the question is a little long, but bear with me here, okay? And we'll start with you, Jared. The question states, I am a seventh grader at Monforton Middle School, and I am afraid every day that there will be a shooter. In this country, the Second Amendment is valid more than the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What is your plan to change that?
One word?
I'm going to exercise executive privilege here and say you ought to have at least a minute to answer that. Do you need it repeated?
I think I've got it.
Okay.
We need to do more. We need to figure out the most effective ways to protect our kids. They're our future, and they deserve to be able to go to school without fear and in safety.
Thank you. Kathleen?
As we discussed before, we need to place stronger restrictions on assault weapons. In the Colorado shooting, while the shooter stopped to reload, 9 kids ran by. Those 9 kids could have been dead if he wasn't waiting to reload. So we need to address assault weapons in our culture. Again, I'm a gun owner, hunter, sportsman, and we don't need those kinds of weapons on our streets. We need our kids to be safe.
Thank you. John?
We need to elect representatives that will put our children and the safety of our children and the lives of our children ahead of gun lobbyists.
Yes. Thank you. Grant?
Yeah, I think the one thing that we need to work on right away is, I talked about the immediate changes we can make. I can't stress how important it is that we repeal the Dickey Amendment. We have got, this is an epidemic. It is a crisis. We have to understand why it is happening and how it is happening and develop sound solutions that we can take to our communities and deliver so that we know when we ask people to give up their gun rights, we will give them safer schools. We will give them kids who go to school and come home every single day. That is how we're going to get there. We're going to know that we can do it with confidence, and we can make the case to anyone, no matter how much they believe in their Second Amendment right, that this is the right thing to do for our children.
Thank you. All right, candidates, we're now at, it's going to be the last question for you. You're going to have 3 minutes to respond, and please use this 3 minutes to rebut another candidate's answer if you'd like, and highlight where you differ from the other, your colleagues on the stage here, and what you think will make you the winning choice for Montana in November. And let's start with you, Grant.
Thank you. So I talked a little bit in the introduction about my work at working for land trusts in Montana. That work was about building relationships and building partnerships. What I saw in that experience is what inspired me to run for this office. In Montana, we are incredible at looking past partisan divide in our communities, in our civic centers, in our churches, in our synagogues. We sit down at the table, we figure out what's happening in our communities, and we solve the problems together. When you live in Bozeman and you drive out into rural communities, you're not looking at every house wondering if that's somebody who disagrees on every issue. You admire them. I sat down with teams of people, farmers, ranchers, conservatives, liberals, environmentalists, and we found solutions to the issues that were challenging our communities. Right now, our entire country is suffering from a disbelief that we can cross the rural and urban divide. No place does that better than Montana. Our country needs that from us right now more than ever. We have foreign agents and foreign governments. We have a president, and I believe we have a congressman, who are using every tool at their disposal to divide us. They are convincing us that we are enemies between parties, that we are enemies over issues, trying to convince us that we're enemies here in this room. The only thing that is going to be powerful enough to fight back is all of us together. So I believe as Democrats, we need to talk about the issues that transcend our divides. I believe things like our public lands are those issues. I think things like our public education that Greg Gianforte wants to undermine and remove funding from. I think that our healthcare system is something that is a struggle for people every day, and it doesn't matter if you live out on the farm and you need to get access to your rural healthcare system or you're in town. Our social service and our safety net is disintegrating. People need to know that we care about their everyday issues. People need to know that we are in this together. And right now, I am the candidate who has demonstrated an ability to work across that divide, to bring people to the table, and to give them faith that their government will work for them again. I have done that working on the farm bill, taking farmers and ranchers and people who didn't believe in federal government anymore and going to D.C. and changing our laws and changing the rules and changing the implementation of those right back to the ground so that people that thought that bureaucracy could never work for them believed in it again and told their friends about that. What we need is people who can cross this divide, bring us together, face and tackle real issues in our communities so that we believe in each other again, so that we believe in our institutions again, so that our children have opportunities again. When we do that, we will grow our party, we will grow our communities, and we will have a place for the next generation to still feel like and call Montana.
Thank you, Grant. Jared?
Who wants to beat Greg Gianforte in November? We need to make sure that we use strategy when we make our decisions. I didn't succeed at the United States Department of Justice because I had the best hair or because I was the tallest. I succeeded not because I saw two steps ahead or three steps ahead. I succeeded because I saw the end of the road and where I wanted to go. And I developed a plan to get there. So I want you all to work with me to develop a plan to beat Greg Gianforte.
Yes.
Because I want to be honest with you guys. The Democrats in Montana, we're not the best at picking people in primaries who beat Republicans in general elections. In seriously contested primaries, we haven't done that in 10 years. So we need to make sure that we pick the candidate who can beat Gianforte. And I can beat Gianforte. He's got two arguments going for him, and he brings them out all the time. I made a business worth $1.5 billion. I built jobs and grew jobs here in Montana. That's what he says. That's what he runs on. I have responses to both of those. I defended and saved taxpayers $1.5 billion just last year. And that's great that you grew jobs in the past. I have plans to build jobs and grow jobs in the future. With the wind in the trees, we can build jobs in Montana. We can expand and invest in your tomorrow to build Montana and move us forward. And that's how we beat Gianforte. We follow Bill Clinton's plan. He says, give them everything that they like about the guy they have, something they don't like about the guy they have, and give them something that they like about you that the guy they have doesn't have. I got all that. And if you think that there might be a couple of us who might be just as effective at beating Gianforte, I'm still going to be able to advocate better on your behalf once one of us gets to D.C. because I've been to D.C., I know how government works. I spent 9 years defending public lands and studying in detail how our public lands works. So when we look at how to modify it and how to protect it and how to negotiate over it, you can either, you know, select one of these other people, wait 9 years, then they'll have the expertise I have. Or you can select me, and I can get started tomorrow. And we can make real progress for Montana and dig in the details and get things done because I feel frustrated with government, and I think I've been hearing a lot of frustration. And we need to be able to destroy the barriers that are impeding our ability of change. So I hope you will vote for me, and I hope we can build this change together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. Kathleen?
Thank you. So many of you know me. Many of you know my record. I've served Bozeman and Gallatin County in the legislature for 3 terms, 11, 13, and 15, and also the state as legislative staff back in the 90s, nonpartisan. I don't make promises I can't fulfill. I go and I roll up my sleeves, and I am grounded in what Montanans need, and I go and solve problems. So I am a conservation candidate. I have a 33-year career in natural resource planning and policy and environmental protection. We're going to put those 33 years to work in Congress fighting for clean air, clean water. Isn't it incredible that we have the right to a clean and healthful environment? We're going to take that to Congress, and we're going to fight for that. In the legislature, I fought and succeeded in holding back really bad proposals. The Montana legislature in those three sessions was hyperpartisan, it was divisive, it was inexperienced. Let's look at Congress. Hyperpartisan, divisive, inexperienced. We need someone that has been trained and been successful in that kind of environment to send them to Congress to do exactly the same thing for Montanans. I am a job creator. Passed bills in the legislature to create a new type of corporation that is very attractive to millennials. I was elected during the recession, so one of my big priorities was to help diversify our economy. I passed a bill that created 170 new businesses and over 2,000 new products, many from our agricultural sector, and that was just in 2 years. We need job creators to compete against Gianforte's claim that he's a job creator. I'm a healthcare candidate. I fought in the Montana legislature to reduce costs and increase accessibility for cancer patients, and won. It took me 4 years, but I stuck it out. I fought for decreased discrimination in the insurance market and to eliminate surprise medical bills. These are things that the experience of being in the Montana legislature gives me, the knowledge to fight, the ability to succeed, the relationships built. Those are all critical to being successful in Congress. So what we need in a candidate is we need someone with a strong, progressive voting and advocacy record. For all those things that we Democrats hold dear, we need someone who has been honored by the Chamber of Commerce for their work with business. We need someone who has excellent connections in the agricultural community. And we need someone who has policy success. I'm the only one standing up here that has fought, won on policy issues in a divisive, hyperpartisan, dysfunctional environment. To my legislative colleagues that are here. But that's what we need in Congress, and that's what's going to beat Gianforte, is that depth and breadth of experience, relationship, and knowledge. So it would be my honor to be your next Congresswoman. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. John?
All of us on this stage come with different backgrounds, and I'll share with you a little bit. My background and the experience that I bring to the table is I sit across from people like Louise, who, when she tries to get her insurance company to pay her husband's death benefits because her husband's been killed by a drunk driver, and they string her along for months and months and won't pay her, I have the privilege to sit across from Louise and say, "That's not fair. I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm going to fight for you." I have the privilege to sit across from AB and Betty when they say, "John, we did everything the bank told us to do, and now we're in foreclosure. Our house is going to get sold next month." And I have the privilege to sit across from AB and Betty and say, "That's not fair. That's not right. I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and I'm going to fight for you." I had the privilege, even though we weren't all sitting across a table together, I had the privilege to represent every single person in this room and be your fighter and your advocate when dark money came into Montana, and I volunteered to represent the state of Montana. And I've taken on those fights, and I've won. And I've won by rolling up my sleeves, fighting hard, and saying losing is not an option, losing is not acceptable. And so I've stood up and fought and won against big banks, big insurance companies, dark money folks that tried to take over our state. And, you know, a lot of what I do is negotiate, and no one believes in negotiation more than I do. But when someone knocks on your door and says, "Hey, is it okay if I burn your house down?" The right answer is not, "Well, how about you just burn down my garage?" Or, "Why don't you just set my car on fire?" You say, "Get the hell off my property." These are dark times that we're in. Everything that we hold dear is under attack. Corporations and billionaires are grabbing the cookie and leaving us with the crumbs. And we're watching it on everything that matters to us, the education of our children, the health care, privatization of Social Security, the inability to pass common sense laws. It's all because Washington is broken and corrupt. And the lobbyists, the corporate insiders, they've got a champion right now in Greg Gianforte. Because the stuff that doesn't get on the front page, you know, last week Greg Gianforte voted to undermine Montana's cap on payday lenders because 36% APR is not high enough for them. They'd rather get 3%, 4%, and 500% APR. Those are the decisions that are getting made all the time right now in Washington with no oversight and everyone just doing what's best for corporations and lobbyists. You deserve a champion. I want to be your champion. I'm John Heenan. I need your vote. I need your support. Ours is a people-powered campaign, and together, we're going to take back this seat. Thank you.
Thank you, John. That concludes our forum for the night, but before we end this, I'd like to just say a few words, if I can. I've run a couple of statewide races myself. I've confronted dark money, and I know what it's like to throw yourself into the fray of a campaign, especially a statewide campaign. It's not easy. It's hard. It's hard on your family. It's hard on all the people that are around you. And I think we have had a wonderful privilege tonight to have these four shining candidates come and share with us their views on how they are going to, if they're lucky enough to be the candidate to run against Gianforte, to beat him and carry our message to United States Congress. And so I want you to join me in giving these four wonderful candidates a great round of applause. Thank you all very much.